And a good Sunday morning to you. For the 27th day of August 2017, I'm Brian Truda, and this is KC Close Up. On today's show, in fact, as this show is taking place, 5,000 runners and walkers are gathering at Corporate Woods in Overland Park as we speak, getting ready to commemorate this year's 15th annual Head for the Cure Run Walk to benefit brain cancer research and to try to find a cure for brain cancers and brain tumors. Among those 5,000 is a man named Brad Eastman. Brad, an athletic guy himself, has run numerous 5Ks and marathons. In fact, right up to the day that he began to feel something different in his body. That difference led to the diagnosis of a brain tumor, which changed Brad's life. We're going to talk to Brad Eastman today in our Head for the Cure spotlight as we get ready to kick off this year's event, which, by the way, as 15 years go by, is going to push them ever closer to the $10 million mark in monies raised for the Brain Tumor Trials Collaborative to help fund brain cancer research. It's just incredible. Also on today's show, another few thousand of your closest friends will be gathering not today, but next weekend for the annual Santa Caligon Days, the big festival in Independence, Missouri. We're going to talk to Mayor Eileen Weir of Independence about this year's festival, which takes on a different look and a different theme than years past as they celebrate a milestone 45 years of the Santa Caligon Days Festival. But first, Brad Eastman is part of today's field for the Head for the Cure 5K Run Walk at Corporate Woods. We got Brad on the phone and we talked to him about the feeling in his body that changed things forever.
One great day, I was actually training for the Walt Disney World Marathon, and I was in late December, just prior to the holiday, and I was out for one of my last long runs in my training sequence, and I had just come back from about an 18-mile run, and after coming back, I just felt somewhat weird, and I thought, all right, you know, maybe I'm just hungry, maybe I'm tired, maybe I'm sleep deprived, maybe I'm dehydrated. It could be a number of different things. This would not be my first rodeo in terms of long runs, and we put our bodies through a tremendous amount of stress. So I thought, all right, well, I'll just kind of start checking things off one by one. And after a few seconds, nothing really happened. It was just it was kind of a twofold event in the sense that there were two things that happened. One, I had this very intense sense of deja vu, but I don't want to scare anybody who's ever had deja vu to think you've got brain tumor or brain cancer, because that's not the case. But in my particular instance, I couldn't remember any of the details, and that's the whole reason why it's deja vu, is because you can remember at least some of the details around it. And the second thing that immediately followed that after I returned from this particular run was a strong taste in my mouth, but I wasn't eating anything, nor had I just done so.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. And so both of these things were reaction of my brain and a tumor that was growing on there, suppressing some of the function of the brain. Now, at the time, I had no clue. Again, I thought it may have been attributed to something I had done during the run. And so that particular type of situation really didn't happen again for all the way through the marathon. The marathon happened on the third weekend in January of 2013, and I ended up, there were 21,000 finishers. I was in the top 1% of all finishers and ran the fastest marathon of my life.
Wow.
A 3:17, 3 hours and 17 minutes.
Good for you. Great.
Pretty happy.
Yes.
Lo and behold, I did so with brain cancer.
Unbelievable.
I would have never thought. And, you know, I was just really kind of high on life in that sense, and training and everything else, aspiring business professional, and just all things. My family was growing, and we had a young daughter who hadn't even turned a year yet. And shortly after that marathon, about the late January time frame of that same month, the same symptoms started to happen again. That deja vu would consistently happen, I'd say daily. And after about the fourth time, just being an endurance athlete and an athlete in general, I said to my wife, this just isn't right. Something's not right with my body, and it has nothing to do with running or recovery or anything of that nature. Something is just going on, and I need to get it checked out.
Yeah.
And so I went to go see a neurologist. I had to fight tooth and nail to get in to see a neurologist because they kept saying you need all these referrals and everything. And I said, look, nobody will give me a referral because everybody says I'm okay.
Right, right.
Trust me, something's wrong here. Something's wrong. And so finally, after, I would say multiple dozens of volleys with multiple neurologists in the local St. Louis area, I was able to get an appointment in February, so almost a month later.
Hmm.
And upon going to that appointment, the neurologist that I saw thought that I suffered from epilepsy, which is essentially just seizures. And so he ordered a couple tests to confirm or deny his suspicion based on my description of symptoms. And one of those tests was an MRI of the brain. And it was at the conclusion of that scan that they had found a baseball-sized brain tumor.
Wow.
In my right temporal lobe. And he said, look, at this point, the next specialist you need to see is a neurosurgeon, and you need to see a neurosurgeon immediately. Now, this is happening a month after I just ran the fastest marathon of my life. In 2 years prior to that, I had completed an Ironman, an Ironman triathlon, 140.6 miles, where I finished in a very respectable time and in a decent showing in my age group. And so I'm thinking, surely this can't be me. You can't be talking about the guy who eats incredibly clean, has just an amazing future in front of him. He's young. His family is all here for him. And he just had him and his wife just had their first child, and lo and behold, the neurologist confirmed, no, this is you. This is what you're dealing with right now. And so shortly after that time frame, my wife and I found ourselves sitting in what has come to be the most amazing neurosurgeon on the face of the planet. This man is incredibly, incredibly talented in what he does, what he knows, and how he cares for his patients. And that was really the beginning of what I term my care team. My care team has now grown exponentially over time, just based on the nature of the situation. But I've just got a bunch of people that care for my well-being, my life, and my family, and most importantly, being able to have a quality life. And, you know, that's just been such an amazing journey. Most people would say it's a curse, but I almost look at it as a blessing in disguise.
Yeah.
It's really been an opportunity to learn about a demographic of patients which most people don't know about. Most people have no idea of the staggering numbers of brain tumors and the population of brain tumors, which are malignant. So individuals walking around with brain cancer, it's really a staggering number.
Brett, you know, let's go back for 1 second, because we talk a lot on this show, and we have talked a lot about the people that we've interviewed on this show about this is really a non-discriminatory thing. It doesn't matter. Brain cancer, brain tumors, they don't care if you're old or young, if you're rich or you're poor, if you're a lawyer or a teacher or a nurse or a child even. We have heard every side on this program over the last 6 weeks that we've been talking to people about it. And the other thing that, you know, seems interesting is that every one of them has a story that it comes out of the blue, and that there was some other mitigating factor that led them to go to seek help from the doctor. And that's where they discovered the brain tumor. And it's just interesting that that one little thing, that seemingly coincidental thing that led them to the doctor, is really what led to their diagnosis in every one of these cases. It's just a mind blowing, really is.
Yeah, you know, you're exactly right. Brain cancer does not discriminate whatsoever. It doesn't matter how healthy you eat, how clean, you know, your diet is, how much you exercise, what supplements you take, what your genealogy is, where you come from in the world, what your age is. It doesn't matter. I've sat next to little kids who are 7 years old in the radiation department waiting for treatment. You want to talk about a situation that breaks your heart?
Mm-hmm.
Sit next to one of those kids who's about to go through what an adult or a young adult is about to go through, and they're trying to they're just trying to understand what's happening. They don't even understand what's happening to them, let alone the treatment or anything else. And then you've got demographics that you've got your young adult demographic, which is essentially very close to that pediatric demographic that just has the world ahead of them. They're looking at growing families and growing professionally and contributing to the world in a positive manner. And they're met with these same type of challenges. The world just says, here's your brain cancer. It doesn't ask, do you want this? Do you not want this? It doesn't discriminate at all. And then you have you have more seasoned adults who have to deal with the same thing, who are trying to enjoy the fruits of their labor that they have put in their entire life. And now that's being threatened. It's really a serious matter, and it's something that has to be investigated vigorously. Because if you think about it, the brain is being attacked here, and the brain is what controls every element of our being. It tells us how to breathe. It tells our heart how to beat. It tells where we need to move blood in the body. It tells where, you know, our certain blood cells and different types of antibodies need to be so that we can fight and our immune system can be strong. The brain does incredible things. The human body is the most complex machine on earth. I'm sorry, IBM, but and Watson's an incredible machine, but it's nothing compared to the human body.
Yeah.
And some humans, and I hope this message reaches everybody, they take that for granted. They take it for granted in activities that they engage in and the amount of stress they put their body through, but they don't consider the fact that the body is always going to respond. It's always going to essentially kick butt for you whenever you ask it to. It will.
That's right.
It is incredibly resilient, but you have to treat it that way from the get-go. You can't wait until 65 to say, you know what, I probably should start taking care of my body. And this really starts from everything down to sleep. how much sleep you give your body, to when something's not right, don't ignore it. Go see a professional. There's reasons why doctors spend years, almost decades, in school. They do that to try to help when the human population has an issue that they don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to say, I don't know. Help me. It's okay.
Right. Let's get back to the story. So then you had your cancer removed in April of 2013. And then, you know, inexplicably to a normal person, you were back to work by July. But tell us about that period of your life.
Well, it was an extensive amount of change. It was uncovering what was new normal for me. And my care team, they thought that in order to gain the most amount of traction on the tumor and the cancer, they needed to be as aggressive as possible, which involved removing a quarter of my vision. They literally cut out of that portion of my brain.
Wow.
They cut out about a fist-sized portion of my brain. So when I now go in for an MRI every 3 months, there's a big black hole there that'll never be filled. Never.
That's incredible.
But yet, I'm still able to function as I would prior to the 9-hour surgery where that chunk of brain was present. It's just incredible how the brain is able to reestablish these neural networks so that your body doesn't know the difference. I was back to work in July, like you stated, and then it was October, 6 months from the date of the surgery, I was able to start physical activity again and running and swimming. And then 1 year from the date of that surgery, I ran my first competitive race again. It was a 10-kilometer race, 6.2 miles, and I actually ended up winning the race.
Oh, my gosh.
I won the race, and it was just such an incredible feeling. At that point, I almost felt impenetrable again. I felt like there was no stopping me. There was no cancer that was going to hold me down. There was no, you know, fist-sized portion of my brain in a jar at the hospital that was going to hold me down. I'm going to continue to live life, and I'm not going to let this tumor stop me.
Wow.
And that's exactly what I did, but it wasn't long after that point that the tumor actually decided to take a turn for the worse in terms of my outlook and started to regrow a little bit in that resection area. So it was at that time that my care team of medical professionals reconvened. They assessed the situation and they said, Brad, we think that it's best to undergo some cutting-edge technology, radiation technology, and also complement that with some chemotherapy. And so then began in the August of 2014, I began 30 rounds of radiation, of proton beam therapy, and I also began the first of 60 rounds of chemotherapy.
Wow.
So at this point, 4.5 years into my survivorship and fightership, I guess I am now a 9-hour brain surgery in, 30 rounds of radiation, and 60 rounds of chemotherapy. And I'm proud to say that as of last month, everything is stable and clean. However, you know, there's still that level of living with new normal. My family somewhat knows that at some point we're going to run into the statistics which say that things are going to take a turn for the worse. And that's where I think research and the great minds who are behind putting an end to brain cancer are trying to make inroads. They're trying to make the determination and the understanding of why cancer acts the way it does, why it even occurs in the first place, and especially in the brain, where it just takes over bodily functions and nobody understands why. They don't understand why it took a turn for the worse when it was really on a great path.
Right, right.
For a great life in terms of outlook.
So let's talk about where we are today and where that leads us to today and your involvement with Head for the Cure, because one of the big beneficiaries of Head for the Cure is the BTTC, the Brain Tumor Trials Collaborative, and a group of institutions and doctors across the United States, some of the best institutions in the world, who are doing work now to advance clinical trials, to try new, again, cutting-edge technologies, and doing research into finding a cure for brain cancer and for brain tumors. So what led you then to Head for the Cure?
I was first introduced to Head for the Cure from my care team at Barnes Jewish Hospital and Siteman Cancer Center. They said, really, Brad, you ought to check out this race that's coming to St. Louis. And, you know, we run a good number of clinical trials in St. Louis at Siteman Cancer Center, and they support us. We're part of that collaborative effort. And so I said, all right, I'll reach out to them, and I'll certainly be at the race. And the next thing I know, I'm having a conversation with some of the PR team for Head for the Cure, and they're like, Brad, you're our perfect guy because you're a runner. You're like the model Head for the Cure, and you're battling brain cancer. So we'd love to have you be a promotional opportunity for the organization to show, hey, look, this guy is he's a byproduct of research. He's a byproduct of cutting edge technology that's gone into changing the oncology game. And he's a runner. He does both.
Yeah.
And so I'm just incredibly humbled to be associated with Head for the Cure and really do outreach events such as this interview right here to help explain what organizations like Head for the Cure does and really be a walking example for what they have the potential to continue doing and even advance further.
You know, pennies make dollars, as they say, and every little bit counts.
It does. It does. And I will be out there at the Kansas City event. My family will be there. And I'd be happy to talk to anybody who's battling or who knows somebody who's battling, or you just want to hear an inspirational story of why you should give it all and come out and, you know, be a runner for a day. You're always welcome in the running community, even if you're a walker. We love everybody to come out and really just show your support for a community that's trying to rally, because at the end of the day, cancer is eating our population away. And specifically brain cancer. And so it's time we do something about it. It's time we do something about it. It's eating our young. It's eating our, you know, middle age, and it's eating our adult. And it's not right. It's just not right. And so let's come out. Let's form a team. Let's be there as a united body to show that we're going to kind of stand in the face of this. And all those people who suffer, have suffered, or will suffer, we're going to put a dent in this and really make an impact.
Well, Labor Day is approaching, and of course, with all of the holiday activities, there is one annual tradition that takes place every year, but this year it has a little bit different face, and that is Santa Caligan Day Festival. And to discuss this year's changes on the show with us this morning, we have Mayor Eileen Weir of Independence, Missouri. Mayor Weir, thank you so much for joining us.
I'm happy to be with you.
So this year, Santa Caligun Days is taking on the look of Main Street 1849. This sounds very interesting. Tell us about the 45th Santa Caligun Days.
Okay. Well, as you said, it's an annual tradition in Independence and something that our community certainly looks forward to. And hundreds of thousands of visitors from all over the country come to Independence on Labor Day weekend to celebrate Santa Caligun. Obviously, you know, the origin of Santa Caligun is the celebration of the westward migration to Santa Fe, California, and Oregon, which all three of those trails originated right on the Independence Square. And we've really heard from a lot of our visitors and our local businesses and residents that they really want to bring back some of the historical aspects of the Santa Caligun Festival. So one thing that our Parks Department has partnered with the Chamber of Commerce on is to create this Main Street 1849 experience. Independence was chartered in 1849, and that was really the beginning of the westward migration for pioneers who were seeking their fortunes in the West, with the promise of gold in California and really to settle the West. So we're kind of pivoting off of that theme and recreating what Independence may have looked like in 1849 with some interpretive historians on that block on the square. We're bringing back some of the fun kind of old-fashioned refreshments, kettle corn and the root beer has always been so popular in during Santa Caligun, and just a lot of different activities on one block on the Independence Square to recreate the 1849 experience.
Some of the other things, some of the kids and people will get to pan for gold, and you'll have the on-time photo booth, and it really just make it a fun festival for the Labor Day this year.
Yeah, we're always looking at ways to enhance the festival and bring different experiences. I mean, certainly it's known as a craft festival and wonderful food and terrific entertainment and concerts in the evenings, but we really want to capture that historic feel and bring back some of the storytelling that has always been a long-time tradition with Santa Caligun.
All right, Santa Caligun Days and the big festival, the annual tradition, kicks off this Friday, September the 1st at 12 p.m., and then it goes Saturday and Sunday as well. 3 days of fun and activities there in the Independence Historic
Center. Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
Oh, and Monday, too, Sunday, yes.
Yeah, and Monday as well. We wrap up on Monday, and Monday's always a really fun and busy day. That's up at the Chamber of Commerce. That's when most of the vendors come in and re-sign up for next year. I always like to be at the Chamber that day for vendor registration and hear about all their experiences, you know, and always, you know, very positive feedback from the vendors who come in and, you know, just tell us their stories of meeting the visitors and the experience with the Chamber of Commerce and the experience with our city. So it's an exciting time. It's a fabulous tradition, one we're tremendously proud of. And I know that this year will be, as we always try to do, make it better than ever.
Well, and that's what you get when your printing gets cut off to another page. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
Right.
There we are.
Yes.
And Main Street 1849 is the big theme of this year's Santa Caligun Day Festival. Mayor Eileen Weir of Independence, thank you so much for telling us about it this year. We appreciate that.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you very much.
KC Close Up is a 2017 production of Steel City Media. Past copies of the show may be found online as podcast downloads on your favorite podcasting app, on Facebook by searching for the KC1021 Facebook page, or online at KC1021.com. Issues discussed on this program may also be found in the station's public files, on hand and available for public review during normal business hours, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. weekdays at our main studio location, 508 Westport Road, Suite 202, Kansas City, Missouri. For all of our Steel City Media stations, I'm Brian Truda, wishing you a great weekend. We'll see you next Sunday for another edition of KC Close Up.